Kick off summer with Memorial Day savings at Lowe's. Right now, get five Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. Plus, get up to 40% off select major appliances and save an extra $50 on every $500 you spend on select major appliances $396 or more. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 5/28. Mulch offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am your host, Gary Gramling. I am here with a co-host. His name is Connor Orr. He is of the Weak Side Podcast, which you can subscribe to wherever you get your podcast. But we'll get that plug in right up top this week because the show is that good. It deserves it.
It's going to be the best show ever.
Well, we're gonna have like trade deadline stuff too, which will be fun, and we can dabble in that in this show. But there's probably gonna be more moves once we stop recording because we don't record live.
The second that we pause, and then go our separate ways, Will Fuller, J.J. Watt, and the rest of the Houston Texans will be traded to Miami for the remainder of their draft picks. So.
Wow, Mahomes to the Bears! Didn't see that coming. Go ahead, Connor.
It'll be very much like Draft Day, which is the best movie of all time. And there's a Kevin Costner out there waiting to get all his picks back.
I agree that Draft Day was a movie. We're going to run through the Sunday action from Week 8 here. And I want to start with Steelers-Ravens here. We won't overplay this. This was not like a must win for the Ravens. Must win for the Ravens doesn't come till January. But I was really curious to see how Lamar would perform against the Steelers offense. One, because, you know, that passing game is still getting ironed out here in 2020. But if you go back to last year, Lamar's worst game, probably of his career so far, was in Pittsburgh. They won that game in overtime because Mason Rudolph was the quarterback on the other side. And then a little bit of Duck Hodges late. But Lamar was really, really bad in that game, and he was quite bad in this game. And he made some plays with his legs, and he brought them back late, and certainly get credit for that. But all I can say was, I mean, some of these throws, I mean, it was positively just Nathan Peterman-esque out there, and you just kind of wonder. Is this a case of sliding back a little bit, or is this a case of a Steelers defense that really just, I don't know, just messes with your head if you're a quarterback?
I think it's the latter totally. And I'll say two things. The one is that I think that this year especially, I think we're rethinking what a good stat line is for a quarterback. I mean, it just, you know, that traditional like 25 of 35 for 369 and three touchdowns, it doesn't really exist as much anymore, kind of given the way that some offenses are being put together. And, you know, Lamar did do some things well, like he hit deep middle on both of his passes, passing attempts there. And that throw to Willie Snead to set up that first touchdown is just him in a nutshell. Like, his awareness, his presence is still elite level, and that sidearm throw is just beautiful. But yeah, I mean, the first pick six was evidence of exactly what Pittsburgh does. They mess with your count, right? You're used to taking inventory before the snap and knowing where everybody is, but they're shifting guys, they're moving guys, they're putting people in places that they're not supposed to be. And that pick six too really made me think about, if you watch the sidelines after that touchdown, the entire sideline erupts, but in a way that, you know, they knew it was coming, that they had prepared exactly for that play, and that they put the guy in the right spot. There's a difference between like a surprise and we knew this was coming and we had it ready. And I just think that we're dealing with the best defense in the league. And so any sort of dips in numbers or in performance, I think, have to be attributed to the fact that like this team is just nasty on defense.
The one that stuck in my craw, as the kids say, was the interception at the beginning of the second half that set up a short field for the Steelers there. It was, one, problematic because it's just game situation. You can't put the ball in danger there. First down, your defense is dominating, you're up 10. There's just no need to take any sort of risk there. But two, it was it was really, really similar to an interception he threw in Pittsburgh last year. That same sort of the out and then the guy in the flat, and you know the flat defender ends up just dropping back because they all got their eyes on the quarterback. This time it was the rookie Alex Highsmith instead of Mike Hilton last year, but it was. We're kind of doing the angel on the shoulder, devil on the shoulder type thing, where I will be the devil and just be like, Lamar sucks, cut him, bring back Flacco, you can get him for the trade deadline. But it was disappointing game situation there. It was just disappointing to see that sort of mistake in this game, which again, not must win, but it's one you really want to have.
It was a bad pick, and I think that one of the interesting things that Lamar is figuring out, and this sort of bundles in with my other Lamar point, if you go back to the pick six as well, is he's learning that he's exceptional, but that there are limits to that, right? So even on the pick six, he saw the defender there, but he's so used to being good enough to look guys off that he threw the ball anyway, assuming that the guy would move because he knows how to look people off, but he didn't. He followed Jackson's eyes to the pick. And this other one, the floater pass that we've seen to the sideline that he's made 1,000 times, that's built in. I mean, when you hit that with such regularity, you're just not afraid of throwing it anymore. And it seems like Pittsburgh had done a good job of like identifying the high risk throws and then pouncing on the ones where they knew that he was more likely to make a mistake or maybe leave it a little short.
Yeah, the Ravens defense was in control of this one in the first half. Look, the Steelers kind of hung around and they figured it out. Over the last 20 minutes, they had 2 long touchdown drives over the last 20 minutes, including obviously the game winner once the Ravens had retaken the lead. So, look, this was, I said last week the Steelers were much more dominant than the final score would indicate. This week it was a similar final score. They were outplayed in this one. I mean, I don't think there's any way of really saying it differently at this point. But they hung around and they made enough plays in the end. And look, Minkah Fitzpatrick absolutely plays that ball perfectly at the end of the game with that pass breakup in the end zone to seal it. They get the stop on 4th and 3 on the previous drive for the Ravens. It was just really good situational football from a team that is 7-0 for a reason.
7-0, and if you listen to the Weekside podcast, I told you this 3 weeks ago that they were going to be 7-0. So very exciting time for me right now. Pick the Steelers to go 13-3 in our preseason poll. So
this should surprise no one then.
Exactly.
Kind of like we just talked about with the Steelers pick six. No one's surprised by it, but you still want to celebrate it.
Exactly.
And they did, we're not gonna get all the trades here because, again, you're not listening to a live recording, but Avery Williamson goes to the Steelers, makes plenty of sense. Obviously, he's not going to do a whole lot with the Jets going from here on in. He goes from 0-8? 8 for the Jets now?
Yes.
0-something to something and 0. 0-8 to 7-0, so that's a nice thing for him.
And, I actually thought a sneaky good job by Joe Douglas there to get a 5th rounder, because he is understanding something that I think a lot of GMs will come to understand, and that you pay a premium to have the pick in the immediate future. But if you wait 2 years, or you wait a year, you're going to end up getting a way better price for that. So he gets rid of a 28-year-old he wasn't going to re-sign anyway. And the Steelers get a guy that I think will do what they need him to do, which is stop any next level kind of rushing attempts if they get caught in a blitz or something like that screws them over. But he's a sound tackler. He's not going to cover anybody, hopefully, he'll stop the run.
No, that is his game. And look, they took him off the field in passing situations when he was in Tennessee. They did not for the Jets because the Jets just don't have the bodies to actually fill in that role. But Williamson, a good run defender here, makes plenty of sense with Devin Bush out. And just a sensible addition here for the Steelers.
It's the equivalent of the live, laugh, love sign at TJ Maxx. Like it's not great, it's not expensive, but it's an immediate improvement to the home.
Might as well. All right, let's go with a Sunday nighter here. This game was, look, I was entertained.
DiNucci.
I'm not going to say it was good football, but it was entertaining football. Let's start with DiNucci. I mean, look, third-string quarterback in there for Dallas. James Madison finally gets one of their quarterbacks in the NFL here. It was wacky early on. They ran a true double reverse. People often incorrectly term a single reverse a double reverse. That was a true double reverse on that first drive. And, you know, I don't know. He got, I guess, increasingly comfortable as the game went on. I don't think it was good. I think he's going to head back to the bench once Andy Dalton is back, and maybe we see him at some point. I would have liked to maybe see a little more read option stuff. I mean, they were talking about how good he is with his legs. You didn't really see a whole lot of that in this game, but I mean, I don't know. I don't even know what my point is with this guy. He was a third-string quarterback, and they did some wacky stuff.
He did make some nice throws, though. I mean, there were some points like throughout the game where I was like, you know, this might actually work out. I mean, when they were ahead 9-7, I was like, I don't know, you have Ezekiel Elliott, and he could probably just hit a few third-down conversions. They might actually hold on to win this game. I was so ready to fall in love with Ben DiNucci. Like, everything about it just worked for me. Like, if you watched him come into the huddle before his first snap, he just starts pounding himself in the head. Like, just like this amazing, like, third stringer guy that just, like, walks onto the field from the middle of nowhere and comes in and makes it happen. But, yeah, you know, unfortunately, it didn't work out that way, and we're probably going to get Andy Dalton for the rest of the season. So, womp womp.
This Eagles offense, though, in this game, and I know everyone was waiting for the Cowboys to give up 100 points to the Eagles and all that stuff, and I always make, I mean, look, it's division rivals, it's a team they see all the time. I didn't think the Cowboys were going to get torched defensively in this game, as bad as their defense has been this year. However, the Eagles, this felt like watching, like, I don't know, like an install session or something like that. Like, it just felt like they just went out there and were like, let's try this stuff. They're not going to score points anyway. Let's work out some of the kinks during a live game here in primetime football on Sunday night. That's what Sunday night football is for. It's for making mistakes.
They are so obviously what they are, which is a team in transition. And the problem is when you're going from what you were during Carson Wentz's early years to where you want to go, you have to commit fully over the course of a long offseason, but they didn't have a long offseason, and then everybody got injured, and so you have what you have now, which is sort of this scattershot collection of ideas between your past and your future, which is, you know, sounds very scary, but is really just, it's a disjointed product. And Wentz continues to throw these like bizarre deep interceptions, and I don't know if it's almost like Tom Brady used to do when he was mad at Bill Belichick for not giving him any weapons and just being like, watch how bad these guys are when I throw this up in the air. But everybody knows that your best receiver is Fulgham, and that's it. And I don't know why he keeps doing this, but I was almost approached this game a lot differently than you were. I was like, okay, you get Jason Peters back, you know, you get Jalen Reagor back, you get Dallas Goedert back, they're gonna roll in this one. And they really just, there's just no fluidity or anything to this offense.
I was actually down with the fact that, you know, he was trying those Russell Wilson high arcing deep balls. I think more quarterbacks should do that, and certainly the guys who have the requisite arm strength should be doing that. Maybe it was just the wrong night to roll that out. It was windy there. I don't want to be Carson Wentz's number one apologist, although I already am Carson Wentz's number one apologist in the world. But other than that, I don't know. The you like to think the, like, the dumb mistakes, that first fumble where he's like rolling out and he just, you know, holds it up like it's a Statue of Liberty play, and then ends up getting the strip sack fumble there. You like to think that stuff is like, oh yeah, you know, that stuff gets cleaned up, but it hasn't. I mean, it's week 8 now, and it's still happening on a fairly regular basis.
I can't wait for them to figure it out at the last minute and win like two games in the playoffs. It's going to be the greatest thing ever.
You just got to figure it out by January. I mean, it is. That's the thing. It's the same franchise that had Nick Foles going out there a couple Januaries ago, and it was like, I mean, you remember that Week 17 game, and then the opening playoff game for Foles, and it was like, oh boy, this isn't going to work at all. This guy can't play. And then all of a sudden they go and drop 45 points on the Vikings, and it's like, oh, all right, didn't see that coming.
It's another repeat, man. I can't believe the Eagles are going to win another Super Bowl.
Guaranteed. Absolutely guaranteed at this point. Let's go to Nick Foles here. Let's go Saints Bears. We'll start on the Saints offense side of the ball. I think there is something to be said for the fact that they have figured out a way to win games back-to-back weeks without their two starting receivers. Obviously, Alvin Kamara is a tremendous talent here, but it's an undermanned offense right now, and at some point they're going to get Michael Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders back, and to be able to sort of, you know, put together this four-game winning streak mostly without those guys is something to be applauded.
And it's stunning right now, right? The state of the wide receiver. I think that most coaches have realized, and this is why you're seeing Bruce Arians kind of like twist himself into a moral pretzel, or the Ravens sign Dez Bryant to their practice squad. Like, there is no help out there available. Maybe you can pry, somebody can pry Will Fuller away from the Texans, maybe, possibly, potentially. But AJ Green looks completely devoid of emotion or eagerness to play, and there just doesn't seem to be that obvious fix on the way. And in the interim, the Saints' offense becomes hyper practical, but also just like super vulnerable, you know. And just you're just not used to seeing them look like this. It's very pedestrian.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Eagles, just not to the same extent. It's just a team that's sort of finding its way right now, and we thought they had figured this whole thing out last summer. The Bears offense, I mean, look, I think this was reasonably the most you could expect out of this Bears offense. They put up 10 points in the final minutes here, and you know, that's 23 points. That's the maximum. That is the maximum the Bears can score in a game this year.
They had a big-time field goal from Cairo Santos. I mean,
the kicking game
was on. I mean, I don't know. I'm liking this Bears team just a little bit more. You know, earlier in the season, 2 or 3 weeks ago, I wrote, broke down all their fourth quarters, and they've been incredibly lucky to this point. Like, so many missed picks or tipped balls or, like, you know, weird little things that have gone their way. But you know, sometimes the season is just like that for a team, and I think Chicago is just sort of rolling with it. But Matt Nagy is back to being a good play caller. I think that the quarterback does have something to do with that, but it'll be interesting. I mean, they tried Mitch Trubisky. They walked him on for a little read option look there, which they might be trying to expand at some point in the near future, but I don't know. I mean, maybe the Bears sink back to earth. I mean, it feels like an 8-8 9-7 team to me, but maybe not. You know, I think that this was a game they needed to have, though, and they kind of just let it slip away.
Yeah, and I guess we can't move on without touching on this Javon Wims.
Oh my God,
brawl! It was wild. And look, I it's still getting sorted out. And you know, the latest as we start to tape here is Wims has said that C.J. Gardner-Johnson spit in his face, and we don't know exactly what sparked this. I will say, I'm going to give credit to this guy, Evan Sachs, that's S-A-A-C-K-S on Twitter, who's the only guy who I've seen who discovered the fact that Gardner-Johnson ripped off Wims's mouthpiece, like his helmet attached mouthpiece. And when I saw Wims start that fight where he runs up to Gardner-Johnson from behind, and I thought he was like doing like an improv class where he was like, you know, snatching his chain like Talib on Crabtree style, and that was some sort of like symbolic start to a fight. But obviously the fact that, you know, Wims throws two punches at a helmet, which probably didn't hurt a whole lot, and Gardner-Johnson just stood there confused or amused. I don't know what it was, but it was bizarre.
I'm going to defend him if only for the fact that he taps him on the shoulder, and then, you know, there, it wasn't a sucker punch. You know, he alerted
Very
him
true.
To the fact that, hey, I'm going to punch you in the face now. It didn't work. And then he, you know, it's that moment where you realize, like, I'm all in now. Like, there's nothing, you know, and I got to do it again. And he did it again. And you know what? I give him credit for that. You could have done something cheap or dirty over the course of a play that would have really hurt somebody, but you made your point, and you know, everybody's making fun of you, but I think, you know, you did it in a stand-up way, you know?
It was the reaction. It was the Gardner Johnson just complete lack of reaction.
I know. He was, he just had his number, you know?
That's what has to hurt the most if you're Jamon Wims. The fact that you couldn't even, just draw acknowledgement that you are punching this guy in the face.
I had a friend in high school who was a really hard puncher. Like, did you notice that in high school? Like, some kids were your size and weight and everything, but just could punch really hard. And,
yeah.
You know, and I never understood that. And so, you know, we would punch each other in the arm while we were waiting for class to start or whatever. And I was just like, hey, could you just give me an honest assessment of this? And I wound up and I punched him in the arm as hard as I could. And he's like, I felt nothing. Like, oh, and I was like, wow, like, I just don't have it. And some people just don't have it. But it's good to get that evaluated at an early stage in your life before you pull it out at a time of emergency. You know, you need to know how strong it is before you use it.
Before you're punching a helmeted man and just knowing that it's going to have no impact. My true criticism of Wims, and this actually is an honest criticism, do it after a failed third down and long conversion. Like, he did it after a 5-yard gain on first and 10. So instead of second and 5, you're second and 20. And, you know, I don't draw the line directly to this is why Nick Foles threw an interception. But, you know, that's you can't give away 15 yards after a 5-yard gain on first down.
Yeah, it was a bad job there.
All right, Connor, it's time for you to take a quick break because this is time for the SI Fantasy segment presented by DraftKings. Every Monday, we have Michael Fabiano of SI.com/fantasy and the SI Fantasy Podcast. We only have them on Monday, but you can get them all week on that podcast. I'm just saying. But Fabs, we're into the dog days a little bit right now. Everyone's sort of scraping the waiver wire, seeing what they can find here, replace injuries, replace bye weeks. Let's do it, and let's start with the running backs.
Yeah, let's do that because quarterback is ugly right now when you're talking about the waiver wire. So Zach Moss is going to be a top pick. He was a very good sort of play this past week against the Patriots. And when you look at the numbers, you know, 14 touches, he had over 20 fantasy points, played 3 more snaps than Devin Singletary. So maybe Moss is starting to make that a 50-50 split. I don't know that it'll ever be one guy getting 70-30, but Moss was the better back. Gus Edwards for the Ravens with Mark Ingram status still in question. 16 carries, 87 yards. He finished with only 26 snaps. J.K. Dobbins, who you should also pick up if he's out there, had 55. He had 16 touches. This is a 50-50 split as well in Baltimore, although Dobbins, I feel like, has the higher ceiling. D.J. Dallas had a very good game from a fantasy perspective. Efficiency-wise, he was terrible, right? Mm-hmm. 23 touches, 58 yards. That's not very good. But the 23 points, nearly 23 points, fantasy fans will take that. And we're still not sure what's going on with Chris Carson and Carlos Hyde. Jamichael Hasty had 13 touches and a touchdown for the Niners. Tevin Coleman got hurt again. Jerick McKinnon was the better fantasy back, but he's owned across the board. I don't know what's going on with the Niners right now in that backfield, but they have a short week. They've got the Packers this week, so it could be McKinnon and Hasty splitting the workload on TNF against Green Bay. Damian Harris had a very good game, 16 touches, over 100 yards rushing, over 16 fantasy points. He only played 20 snaps, which was third in that backfield, but he made the most of them. And if the Patriots are going to be even, you know, close to being competitive, they've got to run the ball. And Harris is going to be the guy who will be the new, you know, Sony Michelle, I guess, until Michelle comes back, if he comes back. Jordan Wilkins, Nyheim Hines in a backfield that has now become one of the more confusing in the league because we all love Jonathan Taylor. We thought he was going to be the guy, right? And then Jordan Wilkins has 21 touches, 20 carries, over 100 yards rushing, over 20 fantasy points, led the Colts in snaps and touches, and nobody saw that coming. And it looks like it's going to be a hot hand situation there, Nyheim Hines. I don't feel like he's done anything since like week one, But of course, in this game, he goes off, has a couple of touchdowns, and Jonathan Taylor does nothing. Some other running backs. Philip Lindsay might be floating around out there, maybe in some leagues. Just check. Brian Hill looked better than Todd Gurley on Thursday night. And at worst, he should be a handcuff. And then Cam Akers, the Rams have a bye. Darrell Henderson got hurt against Miami. So maybe Henderson's going to have enough time to be fine for week 10. I'm not sure. But Akers did come in and look pretty good. So I would say that Akers is going to be worth a look in deeper leagues if you can hold on to that roster spot because the Rams are off this week.
All right. How about the receivers here?
Yeah, so Curtis Samuel, I mean, he was better than Robbie Anderson and DJ Moore combined. I mean, look at the numbers, right? Didn't have a lot of volume, but he has been getting into the end zone lately. Had two touchdowns against Atlanta. He has scored 17-plus points in two straight games. Got the Chiefs coming up. Mike Williams. Justin Herbert has resurrected everybody in L.A. except for Hunter Henry for some reason. But Mike Williams had a very strong game. He is available in a lot of leagues. So is Corey Davis. 10 targets, 8 catches, over 120 yards and a touchdown against Cincinnati. He scored 15-plus points in three of his five games this season. He's got the Bears coming up. Marvin Jones Jr., we're not sure what the status of Kenny Galladay is. That one broke my back in a few leagues. I'm sure some other folks as well were hurt by Galladay not giving you a single point. But Marvin Jones could be floating out there. Marvin Hall also may be worth a look in deeper leagues. Jacoby Myers, the law firm, I guess, or was that Ben Jarvis Green Ellis? Anyways, Jacoby Myers, 10 targets, 6 catches, over 13 fantasy points. And he was second among Patriots wide receivers in snaps by one, tied for the most routes run. Julian Edelman's out. N'Keal Harry's been hurt. So desperation, but they've got the Jets, and, you know, the Jets stink. Other wide receivers, Mecole Hardman, Anthony Miller, Braxton Berrios, Randall Cobb, Zach Pascal, and Marcus Johnson, also both with a look with T.Y. Hilton injured this past week. And Hilton's really done nothing regardless.
All right, tight ends.
It's a little thin. By a little, I mean a lot. So Trey Burton, you could go out and get him. He's getting more targets in the Colts offense recently. Logan Thomas is still floating out there. He's had a couple of good games in the row, then Washington went on a bye, so people didn't pick him up. But he's out there. He's got, he's obviously being used in the red zone, so that's a good thing. And Robert Tonyan was dropping some leagues. You could pick him back up. And then Eric Ebron, like, he's not my favorite dude in the world. And unless he scores a touchdown, his numbers aren't going to be, like, eye-popping. But he's getting enough volume. I mean, he's getting four or five targets a week minimum. So he's worth a look. And they play the Cowboys coming up. So that one there is a good matchup for obvious reasons.
All right. Quarterbacks. And look, this is I don't want to bore everyone with my fantasy exploits here, but I had to play the quarterback streamer game in week 8 because Kyler's my quarterback, and it was excruciating. It was down to Darnold, Daniel Jones, Drew Lock, Nick Foles, and I ended up landing on Lock, and I'm very fortunate that
nice.
I did
that one because he didn't do anything first time. You're thinking, oh, God. Here we go. And Locke is one of the guys I'd pick up. You know who they got next week? They got Atlanta.
There you go.
So kudos to you, my friend. Phillip Rivers has had two good games in a row. He's got the Ravens. Derek Carr's been he's been good more often than he's been bad. And I would blame the weather in Cleveland. He's got the Chargers coming up, right? Nick Mullins on a Thursday night against the Packers because Jimmy G got hurt. I'm not saying that he's a redraft, traditional redraft play, but in two QB leagues. And then who's the quarterback in Jacksonville? Is it Mike Glennon or Jake? Is it Luton? I don't even know how to pronounce this guy's name. I think it's Luton, but it's not going to be Gardner Minshew. And again, desperation. Hey, I'm not going to just give you the obvious plays out there. They've got the Texans. Maybe that'll be a high-scoring game. I mean, you never know. So whoever gets the call for the Jaguars could be worth a look in two QB and super flex leagues, not in your traditional redrafts. So this is where we're at right now. This year, I'll tell you something right now. This year's been It's been a challenge due to COVID and injuries and everything. Mm-hmm. Every week somebody new gets hurt. And it's the big name guys too. Right now, Kittle's hurt. But some of these matchups, man, with these quarterbacks and running backs, it has been brutal, especially the running backs, because there are situations where, like, one week, like with the Chargers, one week it was Justin Jackson. The following week it was Joshua Kelly. Then yesterday it was Justin Jackson. Maybe next week it'll be Chuck Muncy. I have no idea. But it's been tough. For those of you who don't know Chuck Muncy, go look him up on Google. He was a damn good running back for the San Diego Chargers back in the day, and he used to wear, you know, the cool goggles too.
Oh, yeah. I can't go wrong with the goggles. Yeah, I'm just going to say, anyone who's listened to the show for a couple years knows how I feel about Jordan Wilkins. Even I gave up on Jordan Wilkins like a year ago. And I'm just like, it's never going to happen. And then all of a sudden, here he is.
And he looked good. It's like, geez Louise. I mean, and nobody saw that coming. I had him ranked like in the 50s at running back. I had Nyheim Hines in the 30s. Like, he was a flex at best. And Jordan and Jonathan Taylor was in my top eight. Nice job, Fabiano.
Everything's a committee. Everything's a committee now.
And then in Denver now, too, Melvin Gordon looked crappy. If it wasn't for the fact that he had seven targets, I mean, he would have completely just killed you. And by the way, the revenge game narrative this week, what the heck happened? So Lev Bell did nothing. Neither did Clyde Edwards-Helaire. But Lev Bell did nothing. And it was all set up because the Jets were getting boat raced in the second half. Jimmy Graham did nothing, even though he was playing against his old team. And Melvin Gordon did nothing against his old team. Maybe we have to retire the revenge game narrative. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's fun to talk about, but nobody did anything this week. I guess it's just 1 week, but it was a weird week, man. They're all weird weeks at this point. When Deshaun Hamilton is the leading wide receiver for the Broncos, you know it's a freaking weird week, man.
You got to work from the bottom up. You just got to scratch a lotto ticket to the bottom of the weekly rankings and see who pops up here.
Yeah.
All right, Fabs. Always a pleasure. Like I always say, he's only here on Mondays, but he's on the SI Fantasy Podcast all week, si.com/fantasy all week. We always appreciate the wisdom.
All right, my brother. Have a good one.
All right, Connor, welcome back. I hope you're rested and ready to complete the rest of Week 8's Sunday slate right now.
I took a 2.5-hour nap. Let's do this.
All right, let's go AFC East here. Bills, Patriots. So we had up in Orchard Park, you know, a lot of these games we're going to touch on had weather factors. This one, you know, whatever, pretty November Buffalo day. You know, had some wind, had some overcast skies, that sort of thing. So, you know, maybe that sort of muted the passing games, or maybe both passing games to different extents are sort of you know, sliding back a little bit, but. Both running games kind of did what they wanted in this game.
Yeah, running games are really strong. And, you know, it's just so weird to see New England falter in these situations. Like, if inclement weather, a running game situation, you know, that always has favored Belichick and the complementary style of defense they play there. And it's just, I mean, 2020 never ceases to amaze me, and recording this a day before, it probably will amaze us in other ways. But, you know, that was a real shocker to me. It's just like, that's not a game Bill Belichick loses very often.
Yeah, and look, the Bills kept on putting them in situations where it's like, oh, Bills got a touchdown here. Patriots, they're not going to be able to rally at this point. And then Patriots sort of, you know, run the ball down their throats and take it the other way. And obviously, so, you know, it's a 3-point win for the Bills here. The Patriots are in field goal position toward the end of the game, and they might be going into the end zone at that point. And, you know, Justin Zimmer, of all people, the former Montreal Alouette, ends up being the guy who knocks it out of Cam Newton's hands and forces the fumble that sort of saves the Bills in this one from what it would have been an upset. I mean, you know, Cam, obviously, you know, they still have a run game there in New England, but they just have no semblance of a passing game, and especially with no Julian Edelman, no N'Keal Harry in this one, no Stephon Gilmore on the other side of the ball. I mean, this was, you know, I know the Bills don't beat the Patriots very often, and this is the first time Sean McDermott has a win over Bill Belichick here, but this was one that the Bills kind of had to have.
Yeah, I needed to have it to stop the slide, but at the same time, you know, Patriots are making uncharacteristic mistakes. I mean, Cam Newton had the ball in the wrong hand. You know, he's carrying the ball, you know, you always carry the ball to the sideline. He had the ball in the inside hand. That's how you get a ball stripped like that in a situation like that. But just a continuation of just bad tackling, just, I don't know, everything just so uncharacteristically Patriots. But yeah, I mean, it's a good one for the Bills because the Dolphins are mounting a little bit of a run here, I think, that we're going to see in the next few weeks. So they need all the cushion they can get there.
Yeah, that's the same. Bills have a tough slate of games coming up, but this is win number four within the division, which is big. They've obviously already beaten the Dolphins and the Patriots at this point. Patriots 2-5. I mean, if it makes sense to sell, I'll kind of believe it when I see it, but probably makes sense, especially if they are out on Stephon Gilmore after the season.
Trade Cam Newton to the Cowboys, you cowards.
Oh, man. Oh, that'd be good.
I will say this, though. This was just like a random play that caught my eye that was sort of tucked into the middle of all this. But Brian Daboll is so good, and he's going to be a head coach next year at this point. I don't think that there's any argument about that. But the way that he is able to, he kind of took one of those old Patriots concepts and ran it down New England's throat, which is like clearing three receivers out, and then you basically isolate, you know, their version of Julian Edelman or Wes Welker, who is Cole Beasley, and getting him in a situation where you're just playing backyard football, you know, and you know, no defensive back can cover that if you're not running, you know, traditional sort of recognizable pattern. And these little things just set Josh Allen up for so much success, you know, and he's done such a good job of, like, so many New England offensive coordinators have gone other places and called their own crappy offense, but this is sort of the distillation of the best stuff that he kind of learned while he was there, I think.
All right, let's go down to... That was really good, by the way, Connor. I'm sorry to move on from that so abruptly. But we do have to get to the other side of the AFC East here, and this is Dolphins-Rams, and we were all so hyped up for Tua's debut, and all of a sudden the Dolphins get four takeaways. They get a punt return touchdown all in the first half. Jalen Ramsey is out, and this game was just not competitive, and Tua didn't really... You know, we'll get into how he looked, but he didn't really have to do a whole lot because the Dolphins just won this game early.
Yeah, that's what, you know, everybody after the game was freaking out, and they were like, oh, he had such a bad stat line. But it's like, if you're Brian Flores or Chan Gailey, and you have all these packages of Tua plays that you're going to run, why would you unveil any of it? You're up by 21 points, you know? You just let him run the ball, and, you know, you call a few run plays, and then if you need to move the ball, you run, like, some quick slant RPOs or something like that, and, you know, call it a day. I mean, there was no reason for any creativity at this point.
Yeah, yeah. He, I mean, look, he made a couple of accurate throws. I'm with you. I thought he was fine. I thought you really didn't get a read one way or another. If you love Tua, you can still love Tua. If you are skeptical about Tua, you can go ahead and be that at this point. But he was accurate. The one thing that I think a lot of people overlook when it comes to making that transition from the college game to the NFL is the pocket is so much more condensed and claustrophobic, and it's so much more frantic. And you sort of saw it on that very first dropback that he took, where his movements were in no way subtle. He was just sort of completely haphazard the way he was moving within the pocket. And then Aaron Donald punched the ball out, and Michael Brockers, pancakes you. And that's the way it goes in the NFL. And in the college game, you just get much more wide open, breathable pockets to play from because of the way the space works at that level. And that's not what you're going to get in the NFL, and everyone has to adjust to it, and we'll see how Tua adjusts as a smallish quarterback.
The fumble was a bad play, plain and simple. I think that otherwise, you know, he had two really egregious misses on short throws, but those were, I mean, clear either miscommunications, or if you're Tua, you know, the Rams are waiting for those, right? Those are, like, you know, drive establishing throws to get your quarterback in rhythm, and they were ready, and kind of pounced on some of those short bubble screen type throws, and so he just kind of threw it away. But, the two or three times that he needed intense sort of mid-range accuracy, he flashed that. I mean, he nailed that quick slant RPO. He threw the touchdown exactly where it needed to be. So I think all in all, it's fine. You know, he did try to challenge them a little bit. He pushed the ball deep twice. But what impressed me, I think, was that he did not lean too much on his mobility at this point. You know, we've seen so many rookie quarterbacks that just bail every 2 seconds. I mean, Josh Allen was like that his rookie year. But he is already kind of a guy that's like, okay, no, I know I can do the most damage in here in the pocket. And so I think he was doing all right.
I think all right is the, That's the buzzword. That sums it up nicely.
It's fine.
Vikings-Packers, this was one of the big upsets of the day, especially considering what the Packers did to the Vikings in the season opener in Minnesota. But this was almost like the football gods kind of making amends with Mike Zimmer. You just give him a game where the wind is just out of hand to the point where you don't really even have the option of throwing the ball very often with Kirk Cousins at this point. So Mike Zimmer just gets to watch his team run the ball, 80% of the time, and they end up running away with this one. Dalvin Cook and, everyone rightly makes the criticism of, you can't pay your running back, and obviously the Vikings have all sorts of cap problems at this point, and is this where you want to invest the money, et cetera, but if you are going to pay your running back, you want a few games where he takes over. And Dalvin Cook, I thought this was as impressive a game as I can remember from a running back, because it wasn't just the huge numbers on a huge volume of touches. He was creating stuff that just wasn't there. He was creating stuff that you wouldn't get if it wasn't Dalvin Cook with the ball in his hands. I give him a hearty thumbs up.
Yeah, he just gashed the Packers, especially on the right side there. But it wasn't outside the tackle stuff. I mean, this was through the middle, breaking tackles, mm-hmm. and then, and creating runs, which I thought was impressive. But my favorite stat of the day is, guess how many passes of 10 yards or more Kirk Cousins attempted on Sunday?
Oh, gosh. It must have been zero.
Zero. That's so good. I loved it. And if you compare that to, they scheme some stuff up. I like Next Gen Stats has the average receiver separation per snap. Kyle Rudolph per snap had almost 7 yards of separation. Adam Thielen had 4 yards of separation. And the league average is 2.8, right?
Yeah.
So these guys were open and he's just like, nope. Let's run it again, baby. I loved it. Like, it was, that's the one game a year they let Grandpa call the offense, and good for him. He got a win out of it.
No, it was a nice victory for the Vikings. I don't think you read too much into it for the Packers. Again, just weird conditions. And like I said, division rival. They know you well, and those games tend to be closer than you might think they are going to be. But one division rivalry game that wasn't really close, that was Seahawks 49ers. And last Sunday night, I don't want to say wringing my hands, but I was eager to see the Seahawks again, because they had such protection issues against the blitz in that loss to the Cardinals. And I think it did manifest itself in Russell making some very un-Russell-like mistakes down the stretch in that game. And you kind of wondered, okay, can the 49ers build off that? Is this going to be something of a blueprint, overstating it, but something of an effective new approach to taking on the Seahawks offense? And it was not. They had their protection issues sorted out. The 49ers maybe didn't mix in the blitz as much as you would have thought after last week. But the Seahawks, they looked like the Seahawks again. And the 49ers had no answer for DK Metcalf. And this game sort of played out the way you thought it would have played out if you said in August, okay, there's going to be no Nick Bosa, no D Ford, no Richard Sherman, and the Seahawks are going to be throwing the ball more than ever on early downs.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I mean, I just think they're just still such a totally, well, not a complete team, but a complete offense. I mean, just a team that's going to be able to beat you in enough ways that I don't see another team kind of coming from behind and catching them here. And the way that they've established DK Metcalf is just, he's phenomenal. I mean, to the point where you're starting to wonder how this guy lingered as much as he did in the draft to the third round. He's just uncoverable. When you have a quarterback like Russell Wilson, that obviously makes things a lot easier too.
The only thing you can say, and I'm surprised we haven't seen this leak more, is medicals. I mean, he had medical stuff coming out of college, and maybe that caused teams to back off, but it is tough to wrap your head around at this point that this many teams passed on him. By the way, Jimmy Garoppolo ends up getting hurt in this one, struggled again. Just another really uneven game from the 49ers offense. So Garoppolo ends up sitting. Nick Mullins sort of looked good in relief duty. I don't know what that means going forward. We'll see what Garoppolo's status is. And George Kittle left this one with an injury too. So a rough week for a 49ers team that looked like it was maybe building some momentum here toward the second half of the season. Raiders go to Cleveland, and look, they want to, you know, Josh Jacobs is the centerpiece of this offense, and they haven't quite gotten him going like they wanted to so far this year, but he gets his first 100-yard game of the year, goes 31 carries, 128 yards in the ice and mud and slush of this game. Vegas as a team went for 208, but this was the Raiders kind of winning a game the way that they wanted to win games.
Yeah, poor Josh Jacobs, man. I mean, he's getting this 4 yards at a time. I mean, there is not a lot of beauty here. And the Browns had 8-plus defenders in the box on over half of Las Vegas's offensive snaps. Mm. So he earned every single one of those yards. And, you know, I feel bad if you're Josh Jacobs. You know, are you envisioning much of a life beyond, you know, your rookie contract at this point if John Gruden keeps treating you this way? Probably not. But at the same time, it was an interesting game because both teams, I think, needed this to catapult them into the second half of their year. We've talked about how friendly the Browns schedule is coming up, but this was a win they kind of needed to jumpstart them in there. Whereas if you're Vegas, you keep kind of just you're starting to beat good teams, you know, or at least mid-range teams. You have some signature wins finally at this point, and I think you're building a little something, and you're changing the narrative on Derek Carr a little bit week in and week out. You know, he's not going to come in here and, you know, light up the scoreboard every week, but I think he's showing a lot more toughness and strength than he has in years past, and it's good. I think Gruden has typically stripped that from a lot of quarterbacks in the past, but he seems to be at least, you know, helping in some way to accentuate the best of what Carr does.
Yeah, and look, Raiders, next five games, they get Chargers, Broncos, Falcons, Jets in there. They also play the Chiefs. They already beat the Chiefs this year, so pretty much chalk that one up as a win. But yeah, it's their schedule gets a little bit softer too here. And look, they are in position to certainly grab a wild card spot at this point. If probably not quite challenge the Chiefs for the division title, but that's okay. That's for down the line.
That's for year 9 of John Gruden's 10-year contract.
Yes. Let's go the biggest upset of the day. This was the Bengals beat the Titans in Cincinnati, and Joe Burrow does it with, we've talked about how bad this Bengals offensive line has been this year. 4 starters were out for this one, so you had like a new crop of offensive linemen, and Joe Burrow gave a lot of credit to Billy Price, the former first-round pick, who's been, I think, disappointment is kind of an understatement there with what he's done this year, but he credited Billy Price with kind of getting all these new guys sorted out and lined up correctly and getting the calls set up, and it wasn't good. It still took a lot of Joe Burrow sort of, you know, maneuvering and his craftiness to sort of avoid disaster a couple times. But I don't think they were credited with a single quarterback hit in this game for the Titans, which says something about what the Bengals did. Also kind of says something about what this Titans defense is right now.
Yeah, and it was so weird because, you know, if you look at the Burrow's splits and breakdowns, 21, I think, of his 37 attempts are basically to the same spot on the right side in terms of distance. Like, they're clearly picking on certain defenders, and Burrow's clearly more comfortable throwing to one side of the field. And, like, this is stuff that the defense can make adjustments on, but they didn't, it seems like. And to your point, I mean, just nothing from Beasley or Clowney. And really, they haven't gotten much from them over the last few weeks either.
Yeah. And other side of the ball, Tannehill kind of looked like the Miami version of Tannehill in this one. This was, I thought, his he had some rocky performances last January where they sort of took the ball out of his hands, but I thought this was the most disappointing performance I've seen him have since becoming the Titans starter here. And part of it was, you know, he just had an off day, and part of it was William Jackson, who, you know, doesn't get a ton of credit or doesn't get a ton of attention playing in Cincinnati there. William Jackson took A.J. Brown out of the game until, you know, midway through the third quarter when the Bengals were already up 2 possessions.
It's a Corey Davis world now. That's what we're living in. But yeah, no, I think it, you know, Miami Tannehill is not good, you know? And it stinks to see this team kind of come back to earth a little bit because they're just so much fun to watch, you know? But if they become mediocre, then, man, the division is just full of blah, you know? And the Titans were fun. They were decidedly unblah for a while.
It's and it's a two-team race there in the AFC South, and the other team is the Colts, and the Colts go to Detroit and get a win. And look, this is, yes, it's blah. Their brand of football is, you know, it's a conservative offense. They don't want Phillip Rivers taking a lot of chances for obvious reasons. They want him managing the game. They do it with offense. They do it with a defense that can dominate. They dominated the clock in this one. They didn't make mistakes, and they end up with. And I know you had a closer eye on this one than I did, Connor, but you know, this was a little tighter than the final score indicated, which was 41-21.
It was, but my big question coming out of this game, and maybe, you know, maybe I've just been overeager to ask this question for a while, but like, if you're Matt Patricia, what do you do well? Like, what did you bring to the table? If you're the owner of the Lions and you look down on the field and say, that's why I hired Matt Patricia, there's nothing that you can say. The team isn't disciplined. You know, there is no generation of a pass rush. I think the Colts had, let me check my notes here. Three of their four top receivers had 3.5 yards of separation per route. Right, which is a yard over league average. So, and you're giving this to Phillip Rivers. You know, it's not like a rookie quarterback or something like that. He's going to pick you apart in situations like this. So, I just think, you know, as much as we all kind of try to trick ourselves into the Lions coming back and making it interesting, say, oh yeah, maybe this time. This is just a middling team, and they're just uninteresting and bland. You know, I don't see what they're doing well.
Yeah, I mean, it's a middling team with a great quarterback. Kenny Golladay goes down in this one, which is a shame because that's such a good connection with Golladay and Stafford. But yeah, it sort of emphasizes your point on the Patricia thing. You would say when you're bringing him in, okay, well, now we don't have to, you know, we don't have to be in the market for, you know, these $20 million a year edge guys. We're going to generate our pass rush. We're going to scheme up our pass rush. That hasn't happened. And on the back end, I mean, look, they had Darius Slay. They had Quandre Diggs. For whatever reason, they didn't work out, you know, as far as, you know, let's call it buying into the system type of thing. So they move on from those guys. But the guys replacing them aren't good enough. And that's the problem right now is, you know, if you had this lack of a pass rush with, say, the Patriots secondary, you would probably still be pretty good. When you're trying to do this with guys who aren't good enough, that's a problem. And the fact that the guys who maybe were good enough kind of got pushed out because, you know, they didn't want to adhere to your system. And we can, you know, there's a debate as to how far a player should come in the coach's direction, but it didn't work out. And now you just have guys who aren't good enough playing a scheme that isn't good enough right now.
Bring back Jim Caldwell. Bring him back.
It's not too late.
It's never too late to bring back Jim Caldwell.
Get him at the trade deadline. Broncos Chargers, and this was, we'll get a little bit optimistic in this one. Drew Lock shows some signs of life, just has a brutal first half, and I don't know, I was ready to write him off at halftime. It's just going in the wrong direction for him. Now, I don't want to overstate what he did in the fourth quarter. It was still very uneven. You know, he missed Noah Fant on a wide open throw on that final drive. It very much felt like just sort of scratching and clawing and scraping to get that final touchdown there. And obviously they get the big boost from the defensive pass interference, which was unnecessary. But it was pass interference, so I'm okay with that flag being thrown. But Drew Lock just gets it done, and you wonder if you can kind of, I mean, he's got half a season now to basically establish himself as the guy in Denver, or, you know, the Broncos have to go find someone else at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I've liked him in spurts throughout this thing, and I think if Denver, if you're winning enough games where you're going to put yourself out of the range of drafting a successor, then he's going to be fine. You know, I think he's a guy that you could have for another year, and you'd be okay with that, and see if he makes the big leap or not. But yeah, he's fine. You know, I think he's okay, and over the last few years, that has been good enough to get teams to the Super Bowl. I mean, Jared Goff was okay. Jimmy Garoppolo was just okay. And I think that Drew Lock can get to that level. I don't think he's too far off of that.
Well, we'll see. I mean, if they have a shot at a Justin Fields or a Trey Lance, then things get interesting mm-hmm. here for Denver. But look, half season. I mean, the guy doesn't have a huge sample size at this point anyway, but half a season. Sorry, there's a huge bug in my basement. Hang on one second.
I'm going to narrate this. We're going to keep this in the podcast. I'm watching Gary. Now he's disappeared from view. Behind me, let's see. This looks like Gary's basement. There's Scattergories. Sorry, Monopoly. He hasn't turned his clocks back yet, which is something that has bothered me throughout the podcast today. But, yeah, we can keep part of that in. I narrated about 5 minutes of you looking for that bug. So if you want, I was just sort of like giving a little play by play.
That's going to he got away. And now it's going to be freaking me out the rest of the day. It's one of those giant millipede things, like the antennas, like the giant antenna.
They're good. You want them around. You don't want to kill those, because if you see a millipede, or a centipede, that means that there is nothing. They're the apex predator of the insect kingdom. They're taking care of everybody else. So, and they don't bite. You know, I don't think they do anything bad to you. They just feed off of all the other bugs in the ecosystem. So,
they're just they're scary looking.
They are scary looking, but having lived in an apartment that I don't think could legally be called an apartment after college. For like 4 years, that had a massive centipede infestation. They're okay. They're good. They're good house guests. They don't eat the food. They don't get into the cabinets. They crawl out sometimes when you have guests over, which you know you just kind of have to explain to everybody that it's just part of the landscape, you know. But it's good. I think that's a healthy thing to have in your house.
All right. He's in all like baby stuff. That also bothers me. Like I feel like it's personal now. Like you're going after my child. All right. Well, we got Chiefs Jets to talk about.
All right. Good.
This is
good stuff.
There's not a whole lot.
I think
a lot
of people would rather talk more about the millipede, to be honest.
It was fairly predictable. I mean, look, I guess the two things, everyone was Le'Veon Bell revenge game. It's not a revenge. I mean, Le'Veon Bell got a huge contract from the Jets that no one else was going to give him at that point, and then they released him so that he could go sign with the Super Bowl champions. I don't know what kind of revenge he wants on the Jets at this point. It seems like they kind of, you know, except for an unpleasant year and a half, seems like things worked out pretty well for him, thanks to the Jets. But this was Mahomes just decided he'd throw a bunch of touchdowns. Five touchdowns, four of them from 25-plus yards. And, the Chiefs outclassed the Jets in this one, surprising no one.
Before the game, I watched the by the way, just the lineup that I got on Sunday was so god-awful. And we had freaking Raven Steelers, and you know I have a way to watch the games, and you know I can get all the other games, and so I watch them on my laptop, but like on my nice TV that I enjoy watching football on, it was Jets Chiefs, so I had the game on, but before the game you get the Adam Gase show, right? And so he does an hour of analysis before every game, which is amazing. And I love, like, he's turning out to be just like my favorite, like he's like checked out Ryan from The Office, like just like, you know, they're interviewing him about all these Chiefs players and he's just like, yeah, I mean it's gonna be really hard to stop and he just knows how bad his team is, and it's just so funny. I've never seen anybody want to be fired so badly and they just won't do it. Like I don't know why they just won't let Adam Gase go.
Oh man, oh I forgot about that. Yeah, I get the New England affiliate too. So I get both of those, and I usually put on the New England affiliate because, again, you know, not a whole lot of reason to watch the Jets. So I forgot about the days of that Jets pregame show when I lived in the city, and that's what you
get.
But
I don't remember, like, you know, I used to cover the Jets. There was no Rex Ryan. There wasn't a Rex Ryan show. I don't think
there was a show, and I can't remember, whatever it was, like the Jets flight report or something like that, that used to be on for at least a half hour before you'd get, you know, it wasn't James Brown at that point, but, you know, I guess that was Gumbel, the CBS pregame show. So,
huh. Yeah. I just don't remember, like, I mean, when I was a beat reporter for them, it was Rex Ryan, and I figured there was a Rex Ryan show, I would have to watch it, and I don't think I did. There's certainly, I don't remember them lighting the world on fire with a Todd Bowles show, but yeah, the Adam Gase show is like my new favorite show. It's like a dystopian, unintentional comedy. It's so good.
That is a fantastic mockumentary. All right, Connor, that's a wrap for this week. You've got... Yeah, you're going to have trade deadline stuff. Going to be, I mean, look, the Weak Side podcast is always good stuff, but now it's especially good because there's going to be like breaking news you can touch on.
Listen, the Weak Side podcast is going to be up on Wednesday morning or Tuesday morning. The trade deadline grades are already up on SI.com. You know, we give you guys a lot of good stuff for free. So quit complaining and start, you know, sending us stuff. Just kidding.
No, you can send money. It's all right. We can call for it. Give us money. The MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast is Connor Orr and me, Gary Gramling. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. And Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed as well as the feeds for the Weak Side podcast featuring Connor and Jenny Prentice and the Albert Breer Show, which Albert Breer is usually on. They're all free on Apple Podcasts. And once you do subscribe, please leave a rating and review for all of them. It really does help other people find the shows, which are also available on Spotify, Radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.
Kick off summer with Memorial Day savings at Lowe's. Right now, get 5 Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. Plus, get up to 40% off select major appliances and save an extra $50 on every $500 you spend on select major appliances $396 or more. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 5/28. Mulch offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details.
Why is life better with American Family Insurance? Because every policy comes with something very special. A trusted agent who's there to help protect your dreams by finding the right coverage at the right price. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.